is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. A hostage in Gaza is rescued by Israel after 326 days of captivity. AP correspondent Joe Fetterman reports that rescued hostage Kaid Farhan al-Qaidi did speak afterwards.
Al-Qaidi spoke to Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu after his rescue from his hospital bed, thanked the Israeli leader for rescuing him, but he also reminded him that many others remain behind in captivity.
Israeli forces found him alone underground in Gaza in a vast tunnel network, the first time since the October 7th attack that ignited the war. The 52-year-old Israeli man was taken Tuesday to a hospital in Israel where members of his family gathered around his bedside in a joyful reunion. President Joe Biden's top Middle East advisor on Tuesday held talks in Doha with senior Qatari leaders on the efforts to complete a ceasefire and hostage deal between Israel and Hamas, as well as on the Qatari prime minister's meeting this week with Iran's president. The White House senior advisor Brett McGurk's talks with the prime minister and foreign affairs minister came after the prime minister's Monday visit to Tehran to meet with Iran's president. UN nuclear watchdog chief Rafael Grossi said that Russia's Kursk power plant is at risk of a nuclear accident while a frontline battle rages in a region just 40 kilometers from the plant. Reuters correspondent Fiona Jones.
Grossi, the head of the International Atomic Energy Agency, gave his warning on Tuesday after an inspection.
When a plant is operating, the temperature is much higher, and if there was the case of an impact or something that could affect it, there would be serious consequences.
President Vladimir Putin accused Ukraine last week of trying to attack the Kursk plant. That's after Ukrainian troops carved out a portion of Russian territory this month. Ukraine has yet to respond to the accusations that it attacked the facility.
This is VOA News. UN nuclear watchdog chief, again, Rafael Grossi, said Russia's Kursk power plant is at risk of a nuclear accident. Iran's supreme leader opened the door Tuesday to renewed negotiations with the United States over his country's rapidly advancing nuclear program, telling its civilian government that there was no harm in engaging with its enemy. The Ayatollah Ali Khamenei's remarks set clear red lines for any talks taking place under the government of the reformist president and renewed his warnings that Washington was not to be trusted. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports that special counsel Jack Smith has filed a new indictment in Donald Trump's January 6th case following last month's Supreme Court immunity ruling.
The indictment keeps the same criminal charges against Trump, but narrows the allegations against him, removing references to Trump's interactions with the Justice Department. The Supreme Court said last month that Trump is entitled to immunity for that conduct. Still, the indictment keeps the allegations that Trump tried to pressure then-Vice President Mike Pence to refuse to certify the electoral vote count. Chief Justice John Roberts wrote last month the interactions between the two men amounted to official conduct, for which Trump is at least presumptively immune from prosecution. Sagar Magani, Washington.
AP correspondent Ben Thomas reports on a deadly explosion at a Delta Airlines facility.
Two workers are dead and a third seriously injured after a tire explosion at a Delta Airlines maintenance facility near the Atlanta airport. The airline says it occurred while wheel components were being disassembled at a wheel and brake shop. The parts were not attached to a plane at the time. The Federal Occupational Safety and Health Administration has opened an investigation, and Delta says it's working with authorities to determine what happened. The cause has not been released. In a statement, the airline says the Delta family is heartbroken and has extended its full support to family and colleagues. I'm Ben Thomas.
Mexico's president told reporters Tuesday he has put relations with the United States and Canadian embassies on pause after the two countries voiced concerns over proposed judicial overhaul that critics say could undermine the independence of the judiciary. President Andres Manuel Lopez Obrador did not elaborate on what a pause would mean. It's not a term used in formal diplomatic codes, and Mexico's foreign ministry did not respond to an Associated Press request for a comment about what all it could entail. More at VOAnews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Trump indicted again for trying to overthrow the 2020 election.
This new indictment still keeps intact the same original four charges. However, it narrows the allegations against him.
Ukraine President Volodymyr Zelensky says he has a plan to end the war with Russia.
One part of the plan that is already performed is in the Kursk region.
And for her 102nd birthday, she became Britain's oldest skydiver.
At the last minute, I shut my eyes. I looked at the view once I was floating around.
Today is Wednesday, August 28th. And this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Scott Walterman.
Special Counsel Jack Smith has filed a new indictment against Donald Trump over his bid to undo the 2020 presidential election.
The new indictment against former U.S. President Donald Trump keeps the same criminal charges as in the original indictment, but there are changes. Let's jump into this by bringing in someone who can help us understand what's going on. Joining us now is Claire Finkelstein, a professor of law at the University of Pennsylvania Law School. Thank you so much for being able to join us to talk about this.
Of course.
So just explain to us what's going on, because he was indicted and now he's been, can you say, re-indicted?
So this is what's called a superseding indictment, and that happens when you have an original indictment and then the prosecution wants to change something in the original indictment.
And he changed it because of a Supreme Court ruling. Can you explain that to us?
After the first indictment, and a new indictment had to be filed to take account of what the Supreme Court said in the case. The new indictment is very, very similar to the old one. There are just some changes that the prosecution made to make sure that they weren't running afoul of the Supreme Court immunity decision.
It's essentially the same four charges against him, right?
That's correct. The big difference is that the Justice Department was claiming that the attempt to falsify the election results was carried out not just with the help of private actors and private attorneys, but also that Donald Trump was attempting to use his own Justice Department to rope them into making false election claims. So he argued, the Justice Department argued in particular that someone named Jeffrey Clark in the Justice Department was colluding with Trump, and that together they were trying to get the Justice Department to endorse the false narrative of fraud in the elections. And Donald Trump did not succeed in that, and you'll remember that Bill Barr came out and was uncooperative with that claim and said, no, there was no fraud in the elections. But Donald Trump didn't like that, and so he was pressuring the Justice Department and even at one point considered replacing Jeffrey Rosen, who was then acting Attorney General, and replace him with Jeffrey Clark. So in the original indictment, the special counsel charged Donald Trump with misuse of the Justice Department and was attempting to carry out this election fraud through use of the department. The Supreme Court said, however, that any communication between a president and the attorney general was an official capacity act, and therefore there could be no criminal liability for that act. The special counsel in the superseding indictment therefore removed anything that had to do with the Justice Department and removed Jeffrey Clark as an unindicted co-conspirator.
Let me ask you this. He took this to a completely new grand jury that had not previously heard evidence in the case. Is that significant?
It is in that he wanted to make sure that there was no procedural irregularity, that the exposure to the information in the original grand jury and the original indictment wasn't going to taint the current jury, because perhaps the Trump team would say, well, all the information that you supplied about misuse of the Justice Department was improper, and therefore the jury was tainted by that evidence. So we need to reconvene a new grand jury to eliminate exposure to all of that evidence. So I think it was an imp of caution on the part of the special counsel.
Now, originally, as I remember it, the Supreme Court had instructed the judge to determine what fell within their... They gave guidelines. They said these things the president has complete immunity for. Figure out which That's of right. these things in the original indictment there's complete immunity and which there isn't. But it seems that Special Counsel Smith did this on his own and filed this new indictment without that direction from the judge.
So, in fact, what the Supreme Court said was that there were three categories. There was the category of personal capacity acts in which a president, and in this case a former president, would be just like any other person. They're acting in their personal capacity, and the model for that would be he's running for office as a candidate. So anything that he did as a candidate would likely be in that category of personal capacity acts. The middle category would be official functions that he performs as president, where his authority as president is either by tradition or by statute, but it's not constitutionally inscribed. And then the third and highest category is the category where he is acting in his constitutional Article II capacity, where the president acts on his strongest ground. And that's the category where the Supreme Court said there is total immunity and that nothing Congress or the court or anybody could say would take away that immunity.
Even given the restrictions imposed by the Supreme Court, when you read the indictment, it seems fairly strong.
It does indeed. And the original indictment was strong, and all the same elements are there. It's just that one example of where they apply, where the charges apply, is no longer there. So it's really not a very big change.
This isn't going to court till next year, right?
It's very hard to tell what will happen. And if Donald Trump wins the election, then it may not go to court at all. I assume that the first thing that he will do is to appoint an attorney general that would fire Jack Smith. And that will end the case right there. Now, what happens at that point is a big question. I have long argued, again, with my co-author, Richard Painter, that to fire a special counsel who is investigating you as president is obstruction of justice. It's a crime. And so it shouldn't be considered legal. So to me, that would just be racking up crimes. But the Supreme Court's immunity decision might say that the removal power, which they more or less did say, the removal power is itself one of those constitutionally protected powers, and that therefore there's, you know, no stopping a president who wants to remove a special counsel. Then it would be to Congress to think about restoring the special counsel by way of statute, which we used to have.
Thanks so much for the time and the info.
Okay, great.
Claire Finkelstein, a professor of law at the University of Pennsylvania Law School. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky revealed Tuesday that he has a plan he wants to present to U.S. President Joe Biden that he believes will end the war with Russia. Let's get more on this now from Reuters correspondent Sean Hogan.
One part of the plan that is already performed is in the Kursk region. The second part is Ukraine's strategic place in the world's security infrastructure. The third part is a pressure package, a powerful package to force Russia to end the war diplomatically. The fourth part is economic.
He said it would eventually end in dialogue, but that Kyiv had to be in a strong position. There was no indication of what the next steps would be, but he said he was hoping to attend the UN General Assembly in New York in September and that he was preparing to meet Biden. The comments come as several people are dead and multiple injured after Russia continued major missile and drone attacks across Ukraine regions for a second day, officials said on Tuesday. Two people were killed when this hotel was hit by a missile in the central city of Kryvyi Rih. Just the frame of the building remained as rescuers combed through the rubble. In the southeastern city of Zaporizhia, three died in a drone attack, with three others injured in the region. The strike comes a day after Russia pummeled Ukrainian energy infrastructure with more than 200 missiles and drones on Monday in its biggest air attack of the war. While Tuesday's barrage was smaller in the capital Kyiv, the military administration said air defenses shot down all incoming targets aimed at the city. Zelensky said on Tuesday that Kyiv would retaliate against Russia for its strikes. He asked allies to consider joint air defense operations and provide long-range capabilities. The Russian Defense Ministry said forces had carried out a high-precision weapon strike on Ukraine overnight, the Interfax news agency reported. Moscow denies targeting civilians since launching a full-scale invasion of Ukraine in 2022, although thousands have been killed. Several Russian military bloggers said Moscow's attacks were an act of retaliation for Ukraine's surprise incursion into Russia's western Kursk region, the first such action since World War II.
Reuters correspondent Sean Hogan. Israeli soldiers freed a man on Tuesday who was taken hostage by Hamas on October 7th.
Israeli special forces successfully rescued one of our hostages from Hamas captivity in Gaza.
Israeli Rear Admiral Daniel Hagari.
Israeli commandos rescued Qaid Farhan El-Kadi from an underground tunnel following accurate intelligence. His medical condition is stable and he will undergo examination in hospital. His family had been waiting 326 days to receive the news they did today.
His rescue leaves 108 Israeli and foreign hostages still in Gaza. Around a third of these are known to have died. The fate of the others is unknown. President Joe Biden's top Middle East advisor on Tuesday held talks in Doha with senior leaders from Qatar on the ongoing efforts to complete a ceasefire and hostage deal between Israel and Hamas. They also discussed the meeting this week with Qatar's prime minister and Iran's president. That, according to a U.S. official who wasn't authorized to comment publicly on the matter. Also following these other stories from around the world, Pakistan's Interior Minister Mohsin Naqib says they will respond to the separatist militant attack that killed at least 73 people. Militants attacked police stations, railway lines, and highways on Sunday. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un attended a test of an upgraded 240-millimeter rocket launcher system. This according to North Korean state media. California legislators are to vote on a bill, could happen as soon as this week, that would broadly regulate how artificial intelligence is developed and deployed in California, even as a number of tech giants have voiced broad opposition. In our continuing coverage of the 2024 presidential election, immigration is one of the top issues for U.S. voters this November as they decide who will occupy the White House. The difference in policy between the two presidential candidates is stark. VOA's senior Washington correspondent, Carolyn Prasuti, begins our story at a dusty desert stop in Arizona.
This was a gold mining town, the richest strike in the state of Arizona at the time.
Now a ghost town.
Yeah.
Patty Burris lives here with Bino, her 38-year-old donkey.
Come here, buddy. There you go.
Burris says she's tired of undocumented migrants sneaking across her land from the Mexican border. Former President Donald Trump gets her vote.
He's going to deport them. Yes, I am all for that. Absolutely. Get them out of here. And he can do it. He knows how.
While President Donald Trump ordered that a 740-kilometer wall be built at the U.S. southwestern border. This is the Arizona part of it. On his first day in office, Joe Biden paused any new construction.
They could have had it completed in 3 weeks. But
Donald Trump returned to an Arizona border wall last Thursday, although the Washington Post reports the section he visited was built before he became president.
Because there's never been a border in the whole world that's leaked like this border, with all those millions and millions of criminals coming through.
Democratic voters at their convention say their party is more tolerant. Sandra Cano moved from Colombia to the U.S. as a teenager.
Immigrants, we belong, the neighbors, we take care of each other. That's really what it's all about.
If elected, Vice President Kamala Harris promises a path to citizenship and the return of a bipartisan immigration bill that died in Congress.
The Border Patrol endorsed it. But Donald Trump believes a border deal would hurt his campaign. So he ordered his allies in Congress to kill the deal.
Back at the ghost town.
So Harris would not control the border as much.
Don't believe a word she says. Where's she been in the last 4 years?
Nobody stops by the old deserted town much anymore. Burris says she'd like to go back to the time when she saw more tourists come through than migrants. Carolyn Prasuti, VOA News, Pierce, Arizona.
UN agencies on Tuesday raised the alarm about the spread of mpox in the Democratic Republic of Congo's refugee camps, where people are more susceptible to infection because of depleted immune systems and cramped living conditions.
In DRC's South Kivu province, one of the region's hardest hit by mpox, at least 42 suspected cases have been identified among the refugee population. Confirmed and suspected cases have also been reported in surrounding countries in Republic of Congo, as well as in Rwanda.
Congo has more than 18,000 suspected mpox cases and 615 deaths this year, according to the World Health Organization, which declared an mpox health emergency this month after a new variant emerged. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Scott Walterman. In the northern Mexican state of Chihuahua, residents and farmers have anxiously awaited storm clouds, which you can see on the horizon, to bring much-needed rain for dried-out dams and wells and lagoons. The area has a dry or semi-dry climate at the best of times, but has faced unusually low levels of rain in recent years. We get more on this now from Reuters correspondent Arthi Thiaparin.
And so far, they've waited in vain. Near the town of Buenaventura, Las Lajas Dam is near empty, and the little water left is infested with dead fish. Rogelio Pacheco Flores is the mayor.
Insólito. Para mí, pues la verdad, nunca me había tocado ver.
He says the dam has never looked like this before and that the dire situation feels like a punishment from nature. Farmers have been unable to irrigate their crops. Some have decided to leave land unplanted or use the remaining water to keep long-standing groves of walnut trees from dying. Local beekeepers have also been hit as the lack of rain has drastically reduced wildflower blooms. Bees are dying in huge numbers as they look for pollen elsewhere, making them vulnerable to herbicides and pests. Daniel Alberto Ruby, a fisherman who gives boat tours of the dam to visitors, can only hope that conditions will improve in the months to come.
This year, the dam is very dry. Its water level is 20%, and the water level continues to drop.
Reuters correspondent Arthi Thiaparin. Old-fashioned hunting tools like steel snares are contributing to the endangerment of Taiwan's Formosan black bear. The traps tighten to the point of amputation, causing bears in the wild to suffer from major paw and limb injuries. Now conservationists and hunters are joining forces to help save the bears by distributing a modern snare that's designed only to trap small prey. Reuters correspondent Christy Kilburn tells us more.
This is Ali, a Formosan black bear. His species is seen as a symbol of Taiwanese identity and live in the island's mountainous forests. There's only a few hundred left in the wild. But they sometimes end up here, a bear shelter. Ali was rescued 20 years ago with a broken paw and several missing claws. Bears aren't the target for indigenous Taiwanese hunters, but they've been found accidentally caught in traps laid out for deer and boars. Now, hunters and conservationists are teaming up to try and save others from the same fate. Since 2014, 18 bears have been captured in traps, according to the Taiwan Black Bear Conservation Association. Six of them were found dead. This is Liu Li Wen, an animal caretaker at the Wuxikang Research Center. She says nearly 60% of the bears she's found in the wild have had broken paws, which means they likely stepped into a trap, broke free by themselves, and survived. Like this one, a 1.5-year-old bear named Zeman, who had to have his left paw amputated after he stepped into a snare. Though he was treated and released back into the wild, he was found dead just weeks later. Once injured, it can be harder for the bear to survive. This is a new trap, which hunters and conservationists are hoping will help reduce that number. Pan Wen Ming is an indigenous hunter and farmer.
Because of its small size and because the bear's paws are very wide, you can see that it will not be completely trapped when it steps into one.
Here's an example of a bear stepping into the new snare. The snare bounces up and hits its fingers, but doesn't trap its paw, and the bear is free to walk away. More than 5,600 traps have been given to hunters and farmers for free by the government.
I want to help spread the word and to work even harder so that our black bears can grow in numbers and have our tribesmen know more about these bears. We don't want outsiders to think that we are deliberately hunting and killing black bears. All in all, I am very excited.
Reuters correspondent Christy Kilburn. And finally,
oh, that was wonderful.
Manette Bally just turned 102 years old. So, for her birthday, she decided to jump out of an airplane, becoming Britain's oldest skydiver.
Well, I began to get nervous a little bit, I have to admit. At the last minute, I shut my eyes. I looked at the view once I was floating around.
Her great-great-granddaughter was there to watch.
I was so nervous when she went up, but seeing her do that is just so inspirational and makes me a bit emotional, but she's really proved that age is just a number.
So, did she like it?
I doubt if I'll be offering to do it again.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thank you so much for being with us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Scott Walterman.